Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to yet another episode of the Gestalten Podcast. My name is Eric Galina, and this is my colleague...
Martin Gorschwald. Hello, hello.
Hello from a snowy Munich. We are in the midst of winter, trying to stay warm inside here. Got the sweater on. But we've got a special year-end episode for Gestalten, which is basically a summary of the year. Pretty much, I think it's safe to say.
You could say it's the Concept House Oscars of Cardinal. So we sat down a little bit and we said, just like, look, we should do like a review, but we didn't want to do just a normal review. So we said, like, look, let's do proper awards, like, you know, our top three of, you know, four categories, good and bad.
Yes.
And obviously, so this is a little bit of a special episode from us. So we're not going to talk about the cars that have just come out recently. I mean, you know, you probably heard or saw our episode of the LA Motor Show. So we're going to, you know, just tell you, just like, listen to that again for like the latest stuff that came out. Mm. Nothing in between was really coming up. And so we're going to have this special episode, which is the last one of 2018 as well, because, you know, we're going to go on holiday. And we will actually have to see, quick announcement on that one, if we do one before we actually going to be in Detroit. That depends a little bit on timing.
Yes.
But we will have another live podcast from the Detroit Motor Show in January.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, I like the Motor Show ones, the summaries.
Yeah.
Anyway, I mean, you know, by all means, let us know if you enjoy those as well, because that's who we're doing it for. It's nice for us to go on and have a conversation, but we do that fairly regularly anyway. So I really want to let people know that they can contact us, they can drop in some comments and things. We'll take all of that feedback into account and just aim to produce more things that are in tune with what it is that you're looking for.
Exactly. There will be some, you know, some new additions to the Detroit one, like, you know, prime into a Q&A or something like that. So, but more on that later. But let's get cracking.
Yeah, let's do this.
Let's get cracking and let's talk about the... we don't have a tune or something like that, which is quite sad. But let's talk about our top three concept cars of the year. And just to explain the principle a little bit, what we're going to do. So we're going to have a top three of each of us. So we're going to have, you know, Eric's top three, my top three. And then if it's possible at all, if we had the chance to... you know, get a common ground, we will have a Concept House award for that specific category. And we're going to start with the Concept Car of the Year, which starts in the 1st of January 2018 in terms of, you know, the beginning of the year and pretty much up until today. Like, we don't expect anything new to come in the next couple of weeks. So it's pretty much 50 weeks of reviewing that we did. And Eric, you're going to start. Number three, hit me.
Number three for me, I mean, it must be said that this was a difficult thing to do. Like, I mean, we're not awarding, you know, gold, silver, and bronze medals here, but, you know, there's been a number of concept cars unveiled this year, and there's been some good ones. And so my top three has got to be the Hyundai Le Fil Rouge concept, which was unveiled in Geneva earlier this year. I think it's a brilliant car. I mean, you know, it's a sedan typology. It's a bit different. I love the surfacing. I love the kind of underlying details within that concept, and the interior to me is breathtaking. So well done to the Hyundai team globally, and particularly in Korea, for kicking that one off. So I really, really do enjoy that one.
Yeah. So my number three, quite recent actually, is the Peugeot e-Legend. I know, like, you know, a lot of people like hyped it as like the concept car of the year, and I wouldn't go that far, but I like that product-y approach to it. I love the interior. I love the materials that they were using, and I think it was definitely the star of the show. It was, you know, a very, very good concept car, I think, for Peugeot, who have excelled, I think, over the past few years with production cars, and now came up with this concept car. So my number three is the Peugeot e-Legend. So we're going to rush through, well, like, you know, three and two a little bit, but we want to talk about number one quite a lot. So.
Yeah, no, that's funny that you put Peugeot e-Legend in number three, because I thought it was in my top three as well, but I put it in as number two because I really liked what it did in terms of referencing the iconic Pininfarina design, but in a very new way, and again, also kind of product design oriented. But the way that it kind of blended new technology into what is essentially a three box, you know, form. So very traditional. And the interior was also very nice, and bringing it back to kind of some old world, you know, 1970s-ish chic, you know, in terms of the materials and certainly the colorways used. So that was my number two, Peugeot e-Legend. All right. Do you want to move into number one now?
Not yet. I have to give you the number two.
It's too early in the morning, man.
my number two is something that was revealed in Pebble Beach, which is the Infiniti Prototype 10. You obviously saw it in Pebble Beach. I got to see it at both the LA show as well as the Peterson Museum, where we had a really like close up shots about it. This is just a stunning thing for me. You know, I mean, I like those very simple surfacing. People listen to the podcast. They know that I'm always about surfacing. It needs to be simple. It needs to be beautiful. And what Karim Habib has done since he joined, you know, Infiniti, like going into that kind of direction, is for me fantastic. So number two, Infiniti Prototype 10. And coming to number one, this was actually, you know, in terms of the lists that we made, the only one where we agree on 100%, and that's what we always have behind us is the Genesis Essentia.
Yes. I mean, that was kind of unanimous, I think. Since we saw that car unveiled in New York, I think it's just been at the top of our list moving since that point, because it is so good, you know, because it. To me, there's a number of different reasons why it made the top of that list, and I'll just go through it real quick. It's one, I think, is its purity.
Yeah.
Again, like you mentioned, referencing the Prototype 10, which I don't disagree with at all. But I think it's also its GT, its characteristic proportions, which are, you know, also a bit different because of the fact that it's an electric vehicle, and I like the whole thing about that car, from the packaging down to, you know, the lattice work within the doors, like the whole like structural, the colorways, like there's so many cool things going on, so many great ideas within that one concept. And I think the team just pulled it off brilliantly, which is, you know, definitely why it made it to the top of the list for me.
Yeah, and I, you know, for me, what you just mentioned with the EV is it grabs the quintessential one of a traditional car, but makes it, you know, into a native electric vehicle. If you look into it, you wouldn't think so. But if you look into detail, if you know a little bit about the structures behind, you know, how the weight is distributed and stuff like that, it's not just good, you know, design in the sense of like it looks beautiful, but it's just good design and actually thinking about the product, you know. And this was, I think, in the point for me, obviously, the e-Legend was similar, could be, you know, it could be made, the Prototype 10 from Infiniti, not that much, but, you know, this kind of whole idea of, look, let's do a concept car that we can actually put into production, you know, from the whole idea. And this is obviously the kind of mindset that, you know, Sasha and like the whole team have over there at Genesis, is always to think about, you know, let's not just do any kind of crap. It comes from a Volkswagen background as well, of course. Yeah, like Volkswagen always does, or very rarely does, show cars that are not feasible, that you could not put into production. We've seen that with the RTN, for example, when they first shown that, like there was very little changes to that. And when you come from that kind of mindset, but you get the freedom of do, like, you know, such a fantastic kind of shape with it. It's just absolutely amazing, you know. And I think the whole entire team, and we know a little bit about how, you know, the whole project came about, and it's absolutely fantastic, and I think very, very well deserved in their efforts as well. And of course, you know, we're really interested in seeing, like, you know, if this is now really make it into production, you know.
That would be great.
We mentioned this in the LA podcast, but we have been told it looks very positive. Nothing still official has been put out, but they said like it looks very, very good. And obviously, if they can keep it very, very close to what it is in terms of the concept form, that would be absolutely fantastic.
And it also kind of, you know, gives you a certain sense of what's happening within Genesis, you know, where they're going to take the brand. If this is any indication, you know, then we will be seeing some very cool things coming out of this, you know, Hyundai's nascent luxury brand in the very near future. Yeah, so it's very, very positive. So
yeah. And, you know, looking ahead a little bit, obviously to 2019, because it's not just supposed to be that, you know, one hit wonder music style things like you only have one great shot and then you know, like,
not, right?
It's gonna go away. But obviously we're both looking very, very much forward to the idea of the New York Motor Show, I think, you know, because Genesis is traditionally the big guy at New York to reveal something. So if they come up with something similar, so far we don't know. We just have been told that there will apparently be something, but no indications of where from or like what studio from and, you know, what that is going to be. And that's going to be very, very interesting if they can continue that. Yeah, similar to Infiniti, I think. We do know that Infiniti, I think they've already announced it, will show something in Detroit, yeah, as well as Nissan. So it's going to be interesting to see. And I think, you know, in retrospect with Infiniti, not just the Prototype 10, but the Q Inspiration as well, there is a clear line how they can move that forward. Yeah, and obviously that's a thing for us. And, you know, just to kind of interestingly put that out, you had technically two Hyundai cars in there in terms of concept cars.
Yeah,
yes, you have the Le Fil Rouge and then you had the Genesis. And it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they differentiate that a little bit further, because the Le Fil Rouge could also be a sedan-style Genesis.
Yeah,
and
easily.
You know, so it's going to be interesting to see. But in general, this kind of output and having two of the top three cars in there for them as a group is of course, quite impressive.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think they've done some very good work, you know. Infiniti also, you mentioned, you know, they've from the Q Inspiration last year in Detroit, you know, they've I think for the last like 3-4 years now, Infiniti's made a big splash over in Detroit, and you know, they hopefully will, you know, get into creating a lot more cars that we're going to see on the roads, you know, in imbued with this type of form language, particularly off the Prototype 10, will be, you know, in production form that's pretty much all we're waiting for from Infiniti is to productionize some of these concepts, you know, whether it's the Q, which was, you know, Karim Habib's kind of, you know, he did have a say clearly in that, how things were done. But that was very much his first kind of, foray, his first, public appearance. Mm. So he followed that car pretty much from the tail end, but as we know, concept cars do get done in a fairly short amount of time, so he did have influence over that vehicle, not as much as he would have on the production on the Prototype 10, however. So it's very interesting to see where Infiniti is going. But like you mentioned also, for the last several years now, Infiniti, or rather Genesis, has owned New York. And they've come out every year with a new concept that just takes that city and that show by storm, which is amazing. And, you know, good on them, because, you know, that's a definite, on their marketing side, a definite, you know, real coup de force, if you will, because it's really, they've just owned that show. And it's good when, you know, companies are able to come in and say, all right, we're doing this, and, you know, the competition is just blown out of the water. And you know, the work is very good, which is why, you know, I mean, I remember seeing that it was like a promo video for Genesis. And I don't think it was for this year, but it was maybe last year anyway. And it was kind of like Reservoir Dogs, where all the guys were walking around Manhattan. It's like very powerful. So, yeah, the marketing team is also quite good over there at Genesis.
Yeah, they're always having a good laugh with everything. But all right, so we have, of course, you know, Eric's concept car of the year is the Genesis Essentia.
Yes.
My concept car of the year is the Genesis Essentia. So we got to a consensus.
We have an agreement.
So what we, like, let's call it the concept house, concept car of the year award 2018 is going to go to Genesis for the Essentia concept. That was shown at the New York Motor Show 2018. So congratulations to them.
Yes, definitely. No gold medal. Sorry. We didn't get them done in time.
Yeah. You get an Instagram post probably. but yeah, let's move on. Move forward to category number two, which is our production car of the year, 2018. And we can spoiler, I think, one little bit already, is we will not have a concept house production car of the year because we could not get on one opinion with that one.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, you know, everybody has their own opinions, clearly, when it comes to certain things. You know, there was one thing that we kind of did agree on that was number three. We both kind of put the 911 in a number three, which is, I'd love to hear your reasoning on that because I know you're not a Porsche fan. But for me, I you know, number three for me, the 911, there was two cars in the number three. And I'll probably just leave the 911 to you, actually.
Leave the 911 to me.
I'd love to hear why you like that car and you put it in number three, because you know, I have my reasons. But I think the BMW X2 was also kind of alongside, now two very different cars, but you know, the 911 is the you know, pure driver's car and very evolutionary. But then the X2 is something that is extremely hot right now, and that is the sport compact SUV segment. And other than the BMW roundel being put in the, the C-Propeller, which was a huge issue of contention, because you don't need to shout about a brand like BMW. I thought it was well done, you know, proportionately. I thought it was one of the nicer current BMWs, and definitely something that buyers are looking for, so very relevant for right now.
Cool. Yeah, so I have the 911 and the 992 on there, and I had to struggle with this, to be honest. I think it got down to me to the point of where, you know, when it comes to production car, I think, you know, if I would have that amount of money, and then I don't really go into this kind of question of, is this the, you know, is this like a limited budget or whatever? I go in like, look, if I have any money, would I buy this car? Yes or no? That's how I personally judge a production car. Yeah. And I'm not a Porsche fan, but I would probably buy a 992. You know, I do like it. It's what the 991 should be, you know, pretty much right from the beginning. I do have some issues with that. I've mentioned that before, like, you know, the detailing is not always up to me. I think, you know, what I don't like, this is why, like, kind of Porsche stuck with me pretty much with the 964, potentially 993, but is they're getting wider and wider, you know, and I think, like, you know, they don't have to get wider and wider just to make it look even more hardcore and stuff like that. But I think the 992 has found a nice little balance in that. And also the evolution that Porsche has gone through in terms of interior is just fantastic. I mean, I was sitting in the 992 at the LA show, and I really had a good look into it, you know, like, this was really, really, really good. And that was something for me where I just said, like, look, fantastic. Yeah, I really would put this onto my list. And I also want to say something just in terms of production cars before we get on. I think this was probably quite weak year for production cars in retrospect, because I really had, you know, I struggled to put like a top three together where I confidently say, like, look, those are cars that I would buy, you know. And this was a little bit strange because I think from the concept side, like, we had so many great things, but then the production side was, for me personally, so weak that I found this a little bit strange, you know, from just kind of a rating perspective or like from a ranking perspective. So that's kind of how I felt about it. That's why also the Porsche came about. But it's by no means a bad car. Like, you know, it looks good. And like I said, it's supposed to be what the 991 should have been. And that's why I put it in a number three. But like, it's more down to the fact that I think the production year 2018 wasn't as great as maybe 2017 or 16.
Yeah, I agree. I did struggle myself to put together a list of top three. But in the end, you know, there were enough cars unveiled this year, but yeah, I mean, it wasn't a particularly strong for design, I would say. But I think moving into now second place, which to me was, I think the Mazda 3 from, you know, a production standpoint, finally, when it was unveiled here in LA, was a number two for me because of, you know, where it came from and how, you know, Mazda successfully interpreted that form language into a production car. Like, it's very easy to do stuff, crazy stuff in concept form, because, you know, they're not really looking at costs at that point. Now, when you're able to really translate that into something that's going to be mass production, mass volume, or hopefully, then, you know, it's a lot of times, you know, the cost cutting comes into, and, you know, we've seen this on a number of occasions. I'm not going to single out any one company or product, but, you know, they get lost. And I think there was sufficient translation from the beautiful sensuous surfacing that was on the Kai concept, yeah. K concept, that was unveiled in Tokyo last year and again now made its appearance in production mm-hmm. form in the Mazda 3 in LA. And I think, you know, that vehicle pretty much from an exterior surfacing perspective and also an interior kind of simple, like, you know, really focused design really spoke to me. So that's why it's my number two.
Yeah. I'll stick to Japan. So my number one, I mean, let's...
No, you're number two.
My number two, I'm sorry. Yeah, my number two. So I think this doesn't come as a surprise, especially like, you know, if you've been a long time listener of the podcast. I love the Suzuki Jimny.
Yeah.
I love that car. I just, you know, we did a special thing like an Insta Live or whatever it was actually in the car from the Paris Motor Show because it was there. I love this little thing. You know, it has to be number two for me. I know it has its flaws and people don't tell me that it's like, you know, very, very badly produced. Like, you know, it's all made out of plastic and all this kind of crap.
It's also like 17K.
I know. Like, you know, this is the thing for me. It's just like, you know, don't tell me about what it does bad. Like from a design perspective, it is incredible. Yeah. I've seen like, you know, like all these different kind of Photoshops now with like, you know, putting it into like a G-Wagon body kit and stuff like that, like a high-end off-roader and these kind of things. This is what I love. This is a fun vehicle. And this is something for me is where I say, look, if it would be a bit better, it would be even like, it would be my number one. It's literally just came down to the fact of, you know, a little bit of the production side. But in terms of design, it's simple. It's super great. The color schemes are fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen like all the colors that they had. They're flashy, you know, they're modern, they're youthful. Mm. They found a fantastic kind of pricing for it as well. I mean, you know, it's exactly. Like 21,000 euros. And like, you know,
that's what I was saying. It starts at like 17,000, I think.
Yeah. And then it looks ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. And then the high end, literally when you have everything, is like in Germany it's like 21,000-22,000.
Yeah.
So it's affordable as well.
Exactly.
And you know, it's this kind of, for me, what Suzuki have done in that one is they've understand what, you know, the youth kind of wants. It is an SUV, it's a smaller SUV, but at the same time it's just, you know, if you're a young kid and you're looking for a car that's fun, you know, and that is made by a Japanese company where you can always where you know that they're doing some stuff, man, this is the thing to go. Yeah. So I have to say I was very, very close to putting it number one.
But, yeah.
But talking about number one, Eric.
Yeah. I just want to say one thing on the Jimny though, because I think it's important to note, like, it's really important to always, you know, put things in perspective, right? It's really easy when you've got massive budgets to create something that is, you know, going to use the best materials, you're not going to spare any expense. To create something nice. And sometimes people with massive budgets still don't create anything really. So I think it's quite an accomplishment for, you know, Suzuki with the Jimny for something at such a low price point. We don't talk about pricing much on you know, this show or otherwise. But, you know, we try to focus mostly on design. But obviously it does have some bearing. So I think, you know, when they're working to that really fixed price point, the budget is extremely low and they're still able to create some really innovative and cool and fun, like you say, solutions. I mean, you know, if I had a garage, I'd definitely put that one into it. Yeah. You know, the Suzuki Jimny is just a great little weekend car, little beach car, little ski car, little fun off-roading green laning car. And even little city cruiser. I mean, you know, we're going to see a few of those guys jumping around, I'm sure. So, yeah, good on that one.
Yeah.
But, yes, let's moving on.
Move to number one. And a little bit of a precaution on that one. We have, I don't want to say we argued about this. But yeah, had a bit of a conversation about, because A, we're very, very, very far away from each other in what we think our number one car is. But also, I think, in terms of our opinion on each car.
Mm. Yes. So moving on.
Hit me.
Number one for me. You know, I think the Jaguar I-Pace was revealed this year. And I think that was a great production car. There's, I'm not going to say it's without its faults, but you know, I think from a packaging standpoint, from a kind of, you know, volume, you know, looking at that vehicle, I think I saw one running around in LA. I don't even know if they're on sale yet. But anyway, I went to like San Clemente Cars and Coffee. It must have been a dealer car anyway.
We've seen a few around here in Munich as well as the taxis.
Right. So I saw that thing running around. And in the California light, it definitely looked well, good. I mean, I remember seeing it in Geneva and thinking this is great. Now, there are a few things, you know, I think in terms of space within the cabin, it could have been bigger. It could have been better utilized, you know, in terms of, you know, their whole like skateboard architecture and so forth. But I think in terms of blending an SUV, because that's what it's called, mainly to get past like emissions requirements, of course, if you classify that car as, you know, an SUV, then, you know, you're, I mean, it's just better overall for the company, right? Because then their targets are, anyway, it means a lot to classify that car as an SUV when in fact it is a typical crossover. Because I mean, when you look at it, it sits low, much lower than the traditional SUV. It's just the fact that its form is more, it's your typical crossover, your modern day wagon. Now, I love the use of, you know, the glazing and how it goes way above your head. It gives you like a lot of sense of space from the driver's seat. I like the layouts, like the layout, it's very ergonomic sitting in that cabin. Now, I haven't driven the car, unfortunately. I hear it's great. I hear it's fantastic off-road and it's got performance credentials and all the rest. I think overall, though, you know, in terms of like showcasing a volume car maker, showcasing what, you know, their vision for the future is in terms of electrified mobility, I thought it was quite good. I thought it was well done. So that's why it's in my number one.
Cool. I'm not going to, I'll just accept that.
You're not going to agree.
No, I'm not going to agree on that one. But just a little bit of an anecdote. I think that, you know, just to give you, to give the listeners and active viewers a little bit of an idea. So we were actually at the Jag stand in LA and we had a few minutes to spare. So we literally, we sat down in the car together. And I was just like, you know, yeah, you know, this is, on the first sight, it looks nice. But then there comes like, you know, what obviously like the designers call perceived quality. And I was just like, man, this is crap. it was literally, I had the feeling this whole thing is going to fall apart very, very soon. And obviously like Jag, you know, let's give Jag some credit. They have improved their quality quite significantly over the years. But if I compare that one to an i3, for example, you know, it just stinks. And this is the thing for me. This is why I, you know, in terms of the design, I'm not majorly a fan of Jag design. I don't think it's, I think they're just trying too hard to push for like, you know, this kind of BMW one. Or like, you know, the kind of BMW volumes and like, you know, make sure that everything looks kind of the same. So I'm not really a fan of like where they're going. That's why like, you know, this is a different kind of story for me in terms of design. But in terms of the quality, I mean, we had this salesperson coming up and trying to tell me how great it was. And then we were just like, I think, was it like, you know, where we found some kind of, I think it was in the front where the battery was. And there was this little compartment.
Yeah.
And we were just like, why?
Yeah, it is like, it's a shame. I mean, obviously, you know, the layouts and how they've decided to put things in certain places means that the frunk, you know, the front trunk is tiny. Pretty much the size of a briefcase.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I would honestly, you know, if you didn't need to access that for any other reason than for that little briefcase compartment, you might as well just save the componentry on the hinges for that front like opening, because you don't need it.
Yeah.
Like it's totally unnecessary. Yeah. So I think they could have been, you know, they could have made more concessions and more like for space, you know, in particular. I don't think it's utilizing the package to its full potential.
Yeah. And just to, you know, not really to take any credit away from Jag, because I think what is special about this car, and this is why I can understand you put this number one, it really splits the people. Either they absolutely love it. It has received, you know, a bunch of, you know, Car of the Year awards already, like, you know, Design of the Year awards. And then there's the other side of the people, like, you know, it's pretty much exactly like us at the moment. Like you say, look, this is fantastic. I say, look, I think it's crap. And it's exactly split in that kind of way at the moment. There is not really anything in between. And that's why I, you know, like I could very, I, to a certain degree, I would agree, of course, yeah, because there's so many people liking that thing. But this is also, I think, why this year was so difficult for us to find the consensus number one. It's because a lot of these cars do split, yeah? And
it divides opinion. I mean, thing is, I'm not going to say it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Like I said, it does have its faults. But I think in terms of, vehicle typology, in terms of, what it means about, our current time in 2018 and electric vehicles and moving, we haven't seen anything production ready from any other major manufacturer.
Exactly.
So that to me, in terms of future thinking, I think it's a good step for Jaguar, hats off to them.
Yeah. So you talked about pricing earlier.
Mm.
And I want to quote you on this one and just let our listeners be part of that. When I told you what my car of the year was in terms of production, you just said why? Nobody can afford this kind of thing. It's way too expensive. It's not made for the people.
I'm all for the people.
And I do very much appreciate that. But it really got down to the point my ranking system is if anybody would have, an unlimited amount of money, would I buy this car? And this is in the end, from a design perspective, of course. And so the Ferrari Monza SP1 and SP2, so I've put them all in there because they're in principle very similar, pretty much the same, has won it for me this year. I mean, I remember we saw it in Paris. We got a nice little personal tour from Flavio Manzoni about it as well. And it's just fantastic. I mean, again, it comes down to the surfacing, the simplicity of everything. That's why it was so difficult for me to choose between the Ferrari and the Jimny, was because they're both simple and beautiful in their own way, And I think the Ferrari just has a slight edge, because for me, that kind of comes back into the older Ferrari style. It kind of picks on the history of Ferrari, the beauty of Ferrari, what it used to be, where now it has become a little bit more edgy from time to time. And I think this was the kind of reincarnation for me of this beautiful, really absolutely beautiful, and probably one of the best Ferraris in the last 5-10 years that came down. And obviously it is very limited. I think it's 499 cars. And they said, depends on the orders, and then we decide which one we're going to make, so SP1 or SP2. But it really got to the point where I'm saying, look, I absolutely love this thing. If I would have the 1.6 million or whatever it costs, I would buy it, because it just got down to the fact of just its sheer beauty. Yeah. And so it's, I'm going from 20 grand to 1.6 million.
I don't disagree with you. I mean, obviously the Ferrari is very good, but like I said earlier, with seemingly unlimited budgets, you're able to create some really cool stuff.
So exactly.
With that in mind, obviously the exterior, the surfacing, the body of that vehicle is sublime, as are the materials and, the fact that they were able to explore so many things. Now, there's a reason for me not to pick that in, car. One, because it costs 1.6 million. Who the hell can afford that? And two, because of the fact that it's very limited production. Yeah. So, for me, I wanted to pick vehicles that were, available to the people in greater volume.
Power to the people.
Yeah, power to the people.
Power to the people.
And I mean, this year we have to do a little side note here, a little ding, a little asterisk. This year has really been the year for me, I think more so than any other, of limited series vehicles. We've talked about this on numerous podcasts in the past. It just keeps going. It's like, a tumbleweed that's just accumulating, getting bigger and bigger over time. And it's going to continue to be that way, because we're going to see a disparity continue between the Renault Clios and the Suzuki Jimnys of the world versus the, one-off bespoke, Rolls Royce, whatever the hell that thing was called.
What's it called? The Sweptail.
Sweptail. Sweptail. Yeah, thank you. And it's interesting the way that the industry is going now. In terms of, electric propulsion, autonomy, all of those big, massive, trendy things. that are taking place. And, you know, it's really creating a divide within, you know, what these large volume car makers are able to produce. And then what these, you know, niche and supercar and, you know, manufacturers like Ferrari, for example, are putting out to cater to those really discerning, you know, high net worth individuals.
Yeah. Yeah. Very true. But yeah, as mentioned, we have not been able to find a consensus number one.
No.
So there is no, unfortunately, there is no concept car.
No.
Sorry, production car.
Production
of,
car.
Of the year for us, no. In that sense. But in that kind of case, let us know what you think.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Because that think? Is like, you know, tell us what you think is production car number year. And if you know, we have, I don't know, like, you know, 100 people saying this is number one for us, maybe we jump on that.
Yeah, you know what? I think, you know, maybe it's a good idea, you know, just cast your votes. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's a way for you to do that. We'll figure out a way.
I know what we can do. Okay, so we'll do the following, yeah? Check our Instagram in the next few days from when this is recorded. We will have a story post or something like that on there, or like, you know, just a normal kind of post, and we'll ask you to comment on the production car of the year because we couldn't find ours as a whole.
Yeah, quite. That's a good way of getting your ideas over to us. And you can just shoot a quick line, let us know what your concept car of the year was, and if you
and
feel
the production as well. And the production as well.
Production as well is production really what we're looking for. Production car of the year was. But also, like, a little summary as to why, if you do want to add that. Because it's always interesting to know, you know, why people choose what they choose.
Good. All right. So we have 2 out of 3 big categories.
Yeah.
And we will have also, just to kind of spoil that a little bit, we'll have a raspberry.
Yes.
You know, the bad Oscars.
The fails of 2018.
We will do that as well, but that's going to be the fun part towards the end. But yeah. Our last big category in terms of awards will be the design team of the year. And just to kind of explain what we mean by that, it's not what the design teams have been actually doing in their studios this year. That would be very, very difficult for us to judge. But what we mean is, like, you know, what the kind of results of the design teams, you know, have come out this year on a constant level. I think this is what we're going to judge them on. We're not going to judge them on just one fantastic car and the rest was, you know, crap, pretty much. What we're going to do is we can see some consistency. We see a development, for example, where we then say, like, look, this is going into the right direction, and that's how we're gonna rank them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, design team of the year, top three, Eric, number three.
I kind of went back and forth on this one. Ultimately, I think I chose Genesis. Mainly because of what it is that we've seen unveiled in the last year.
Yep.
You know, and having spent a bit of time with the people that are behind the scenes, you know, like Sasha Salipanov, for example, and, you know, Luke Donkerbok, you know, and the team over at Genesis, particularly the European studio, like, that I know those guys. Mm. I mean, I know some of the guys over there in the US as well, but I really do like the direction that they're going in, and I think that it is predominantly led by design. They're really initiating everything and guiding that brand into what it is that it will eventually become and has become. So that's why, you know, I tip my hat to those guys at Genesis.
Cool. So my number three, we have mentioned them before with the Prototype 10, is the Infinity Design Team. And mainly for the reason, and I have a little bit of an asterisk on that one, because we haven't seen really new production cars from them.
Mm-hmm.
But the direction that we have seen now with, you know, Karim Habib coming in, him kind of interpreting Japanese culture and mixing it with his kind of global background. I mean, that guy has been everywhere in the world, you know, and it's really, really interesting to see that. Q Inspiration was the first one, and obviously the Prototype 10 came about. You know, even looking better, the Prototype 9, where he wasn't involved, but, like, you know, it is a very, very clear kind of statement where they're going to. Mm-hmm. And I am very, very much looking forward to, A, what they're now going to show in Detroit, mm-hmm. and also, of course, where they're going to from a production perspective. That's why there's a little asterisk in there. But you can clearly see there's a constant level of a very, very good quality on all different kinds of levels. Mm-hmm. And, of course, you know, you see there's a willingness to change things. You know, I mean, Infiniti always had good concept cars, but then they never really put it out into a production level. Now they have fantastic concept cars. So obviously the bar is quite high. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's why for me, I've put them on with a little bit of an asterisk, but in terms of like the output that they've had so far, it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely, I mean, I agree with you. I put Infiniti in number two because, you know, I thought that in terms of what it is that they've been doing and particularly since the arrival of Karim Habib, but also since Alfonso Albeza has been at the top, yeah. you know, since that transition, you know, over, I always liked Nakamura. I always really, you know, got on with him famously. I thought he was a brilliant guy over the in charge of Nissan Infiniti overall. But it seems like, you know, there's a lot more kind of movement going on now that Alfonso's in place. And yeah, I mean, for the exact reason that you outlined, I think, earlier, it's like, I think they've found their niche, and Alfonso in particular really strives on that Japanese. This is a guy that's also very international, yeah, you yeah. know, and one of the very few non-Japanese, you know, executives at a Japanese company. So that was, I think, a huge accomplishment for him. But he's able to really take into account what Japanese values are and then convey that into, you know, vehicles.
Yeah.
And he's done that quite successfully and now with Karim as well. In terms of bringing those values into the product range at Infiniti. And again, like you mentioned, it's a shame that, you know, we haven't yet, because this has been going on for years, right? You know, we've yet to see a, you know, real, you know, manifestation of those values into a production vehicle. Now, you know, we were a bit disappointed in Paris when we saw that kind of, you know,
the Project Black.
Yeah, very like the Project Black S, like, you know, just kind of in a little corner over there, like not
which
really.
Was cool as well. I mean, it was
yeah.
The way they did it was actually very, very interesting.
Oh, no, I thought the car itself was great. I just thought the presentation
yeah, was crap.
Was fucking horrible.
It was terrible.
It's a shame because, you know, they, yeah. They just could have done a much better job in terms of doing that, you know. So I think Nissan as a whole, unfortunately, from a marketing perspective, is nowhere, doesn't have, like, can't hold a candle to, like, Genesis, for example, yeah. you know. I think they've done so many cool things when you think about the history of the company. I mean, you go back to Infiniti with the FX, you know.
Yeah.
That was, like, a car that pretty much invented the coupe crossover SUV typology. And no one really knows about that because, you know, Nissan didn't do a good job marketing that vehicle. So it's a real shame. Anyway, I think if the from a design team perspective, maybe there should be a bit more, you know, together with discussion together with the marketing team in terms of like really bringing, you know, design to the fore as other companies have and really aligning themselves together to talk more about what it is that's happening. But
yeah.
I think, yeah, Infiniti, a clear second for me. And for reasons that, you know, we've seen the concept car and for hopefully what it means for the yeah. future.
So my number two, and, you know, I know we've talked about those guys a lot. And they have received so much praise over the past few years, is Volvo. And the reason being for that is actually not necessarily just because of the design quality that they've kind of released over the, not just this year but also last year, of course. So it's the kind of ADA continuity is like they're so good in terms of what they're doing at the moment. And you could very, very much argue, is it the best design team in the world at the moment? But for me, what this really made it very, very clear, and where I'm just saying, like, I need to put them into my top two, like top three in total, is their courage. because I was blown away by the fact that, you know, in the first press day, there were no cars. They understand that design can also communicate in a different way, that it's not just about the car itself, that design is so much more. And obviously something very, you know, Scandinavian in general to do that. You know, it's again the kind of simplicity. We don't need to show you always the product, we can tell you about it and you know exactly what it looks like, you know. But it's also things such as the 360C, which I first of all was quite critical. Then I had a little bit of a demo in LA of it, and I was just like, wow, this is actually just intellectually, it's just fantastic, you know. And I think in terms of where Volvo is going into this kind of premium sector, Scandinavian style, you know, like a very simple kind of style, but still high quality and everything. This is the most interesting one for me. You know, it's not the XC60 is a fantastic car, XC40, XC90, you know, pretty much almost all the stuff that they've released this year has been really, really good. But it's just this kind of, you know, forward thinking way in terms of a design, and not just in terms of just a car. I mean, we know that in Volvo, like even the stand design for the shows is part of the design department. Yeah. So thinking really further ahead with those kind of things is something that I do really appreciate that. And so that's why for me, the Volvo team is number two, and not just necessarily for like the cars. I think just for the overall understanding of the design and of the transportation design or mobility design nowadays. That's for me to sum it up from that side.
Yeah, so I mean, I agree with you, and which is why I put Volvo as my number one. I think in terms of what we've seen this year, not only the vehicles that have been produced and launched this year, I mean, also, you know, Volvo and then now Polestar, you know, Polestar and Volvo kind of still integral, still kind of the same team. I agree with you in terms of, you know, what it is that they're doing in terms of putting design out there. I think, again, it is it's design led, certainly, but it's, you know, very marketing focused as well. So for example, you know, the LA show stand, something that's very fresh in our minds because it only happened a few weeks ago, not having, you know, cars on the show stand definitely got the press talking, got the company in maybe, you know, newspapers or websites that they normally wouldn't have, and column inches is gold. So any time that anyone is talking about a company, it's brilliant. Now, obviously they didn't carry that on because second press day, there were vehicles all over the place. And that's great. But at the same time, they did have, as you mentioned, that VR experience for the 360, you know, where you were able to fully immerse yourself in a kind of seating book and experience the concept, which isn't actually real, I think. It's just only
virtual. I think they did one show car buck.
Was there a real car?
I think there was one real car, but like, you know, just an exterior thing, was just an inside out model. But,
okay.
But yeah, just...
Yeah, I thought it wasn't purely digital anyway, but... It's still an interesting idea, you know, for the future of Volvo and where they're going. But yeah, I mean, I think in terms of what we've seen, not only from the product, you know, the accomplishment pretty much in such a short span of time, it must be said, moving that company into, you know, competing with the likes of Mercedes and BMW at the same level, at the same price point, would have been unheard of several years back. And now, you know, you're like, yeah, I quite like Volvos, and you go and look at them and they're bloody expensive, so they've definitely attained that premium, you know, level, and they've done that through design. And, you know, for the last 2 years, but we didn't have one of these awards last year. So, you know, I think, definitely for me, again, I don't know what the hell's going on behind closed doors. It might be a bloody mess, but it doesn't look that way because they're coming out with some really cool stuff. For the entire kind of brand.
Yeah.
And so that aura is definitely, top number one for me.
Yeah. So my number one might be a bit of a surprise for a number of people, but I've picked the Škoda design team as number one, because I think what they have done and what they have released this year in terms of quality, in terms of development, you know, evolution, not revolution, has been outstanding. And I think For me, the Škoda design team is at the moment by far the best Volkswagen design team, followed by the Seat design team.
Hmm.
You know, I don't think any other of them can really get anywhere close at this moment in time. And it's, yeah, I don't know. It's like every time I see a new concept car, like, you know, it makes sense for them to do that. It makes sense to show something like that. It's not overly crazy, of course. Yeah. So you can judge them like, oh, do like a proper, you know, Gran Turismo car or something like that. I don't know. Like, I don't mind that much. But it's just good, you know. And obviously they have success. I mean, they're the most, I think like they're now the second or like even the most successful brand within Volkswagen in terms of sales numbers and everything. So they're clearly doing something right, but they're jumping also into the right niches. You know, they've just released the Scala, and if you see that, that's just bloody good. You know, that's just the way it is. And and that's the reason for me why for me personally Škoda 2018 is number one. And yeah, but we do have a consensus number one. So the Concept House Design Team of the Year 2018 award goes to the Volvo design team up in Gothenburg. So congratulations to Thomas Englad, Robin Page, Tisha Johnson, you know, and everybody else in that
Max,
team.
Max, those people,
of course, yeah.
You know, obviously those are the guys at the very top.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is an award for the team. So everyone that is, you know, within there, we don't have enough time to go through all that.
Exactly.
We don't know everybody in that team. But I think that as a whole, yeah, the consensus is the Volvo team is winning. Yeah. And, you know, hats off to Škoda as well, because, you know, I do really, really enjoy how people and companies tend to harness certain elements that are specific to their regions.
Yeah.
So Škoda's doing that, you know, and you know, Mazda's doing that, Infiniti's doing that. So I think, you know, even though there isn't perhaps a J factor, that's a subject for another podcast, I think there's still certain things to be said for a brand that can bring in certain elements of, you know, where they're coming from and convey that into the product. Yeah. But anyway, Volvo is number one for our design team. Now, we're going to move into...
Oh, the fun session. Can we now just go a little bit mental? So we have the Raspberry of Concept House 2018, or as we call it, the fails
yes.
of 2018. And we're going to have the same category, but we're only going to talk about one thing. So not like a top three, but literally just like, let's not call it the worst of the worst, but like, you know, what we thought was like the kind of disappointment.
A disappointment, exactly.
Yeah. So Concept Car of the Year, Eric, hit me.
Concept car of the year, I would say the Icona Nucleus thing. Now, I really like
just to say that.
Yeah.
Worst concept car of the year.
What did I say?
We just said concept car of the year. We don't want to be quoted in the wrong way. Just
right.
Like, oh, it's the best car of the year.
Yeah, so. No, I don't. You know, the thing is, I'm gonna do a little asterisk here myself, because I generally love cars. I love anything. If I'm in Italy and I'm driving a 20-year-old Fiat Panda, I'm stoked. I love all types of vehicles. Now, this is very specific to, in my mind, you know, how I'm judging this in terms of, you know, a disappointment is it really, you know, is there a future for this? Like, how does it represent our current kind of paradigm, and what issues does it resolve? So that's really like how I'm judging this. How I'm going about this. So for me, that Icona Nucleus thing is, I like Samuel Shufar and his team. You know, they're in, I think they're in the States, definitely in LA, and also in China. Anyway, the point is, that thing is the size of my house.
Yeah.
Now, I don't really, even if we're looking at, you know, the future of luxury, and like everybody's going to be in these like beautiful, like, you know,
pods
of like luxury, I fail to see how something like that is going to be, you know, able to be used in a city like, you know, Munich or Paris or London. It's like, I just don't, you know, I don't get it. So from a design perspective, it's a fail for me.
Cool. So my fail of the year in terms of a concept car is going to Renault. And it's the Easy Altimo, which mainly for me has to do with the quality of other concept cars, like of the quality that we're used to from Renault at the moment. And I'm a big fan of the Easy Pro. I think that concept is absolutely incredible. Yeah, like, you know, I was in love with the thing when they had the barista bar and all these things at the Paris Motor Show. incredible. But the Easy Ultimo was just, for me, something that seemed a little bit just like, oh shit, we have to do something for the Paris Motor Show. It's 120 years of Renault. You know, it's like, oh, let's do something luxury. Like, it's too big. It's overstyled. It's kind of, you know, oh, let's put some parametric modeling in there and stuff like that. So it's just too forced for me. And compared to what we've seen, like, you know, especially with the Trésor or something like that, where you really clearly saw that there went, you know, time and thinking in there, like really, really good stuff. I would really say the Easy Ultimo, unfortunately, was for me the thumbs down of 2018.
And I think that's similar to, you know, the Ultimo and the Icona Nucleus thing. Is it's, I think the reason why those cars let us down is, you know, I think certain details on the Ultimo were nice, but ultimately it's just, how do people, you know, when you think about design, you've got to think about it not only from an aesthetic perspective, like, does it look good, but how are people going, you know, like, the Ultimo is super low, you know, in terms of, like, ingress, egress. It's like, are you serious?
Lawrence Funnenacker pretty much couldn't get in there. Like, you know, he had to fall into the whole thing. I remember when we were standing there and he was going in. So,
I just don't think either of those vehicles is an accurate depiction of what we're going to be doing in the near future in terms of luxury. And so I think they missed the mark, and I think we can agree on that bit.
So,
moving into now, what would you want to do?
Bad production car of the year.
Bad production car. All right. Well, production car. The thing is, again, I love to drive, and I know that this car is going to be fun to drive, but it's a bit of a shame for me because, you know, I debated this a bit. BMW, generally, I own one. They're fun to drive. Yeah. They're great fun to drive cars. But I debated this between the 3 Series and the BMW Z4, and ultimately the Z or Z, whatever you want to call it, 4 is unfortunately a big disappointment for me. And the major disappointment for me is in its proportions. I think the interior is fine. I can live with that. It's fine. It's good. 3 Series, you know, similarly, it's like, I just don't think it's progressive enough. Mm. But, you know, I can live with it. Where I'm kind of, you know, it just seems like every Z car that's been revealed since the Z3 has just kind of let me down a little bit more over, you know, progressively. So, like, the last Z4 was all right, you know, it was okay. I mean, it was definitely better than the Z3, but then I don't know why they're calling this new one the Z4, because it should be a Z5, I guess, right? It's definitely a huge step change in terms of, you know, what the 4 was, the last 4. But again, what really lets me down, I think, and I can't get that image out of my head, is the front overhang on that vehicle. Mm. I haven't been behind the wheel. I have no idea what it's like. But when you look at it, the overhangs on that car, I just don't understand. Maybe they were, you know, saddled with the wrong platform. Maybe they tried to, you know, I have no idea what the deal was.
Yeah.
But I just don't like it.
And especially, like, just because we know the Supra is coming very, very soon. And from all what we hear, is the Supra is much better than the Z4, which is the same platform.
So exactly.
Then we have something to really compare of. But, like, I do agree. It's not my favorite car of the year. But for me, the thumbs down of 2018. And this is very emotional to me, I have to say that. Yeah, so this is a fully emotional kind of point, is the Aston Martin DBS.
Hmm.
I'm so sad. I'm so angry with that car. I just call it the whale because it has the front is just like, you know, I'm just going to eat you like a whale shark. I just think I like the DB11. I don't like the new Vantage. Yeah, like, you know, please make a proper front out of this. Like, don't have the graphic in there. You know, like, what the hell is that? And the DBS is just a continuation of that. It's just terrible. I know there's, again, a bunch of people that like it. For me, it goes away from what Aston Martin is supposed to be like. You know, they have this kind of, oh, it's supposed to be beautiful marketing thing. No, the DBS is not beautiful. You know, the DBS wants to eat you, and I don't want to have a car that wants to eat you. So that's really the point for me, is what I'm saying. Just like, no, thank you very much. That's probably my worst of 2018.
Hmm.
But to finish this all off, we have a consensus. I know this sounds really mean when we say that, but worst design team of the year, or like most disappointing design team of the year, probably hits it better. I don't want to say worst because they can do some good stuff if you've seen before. But
yes,
the biggest disappointment of a design team is BMW.
Yeah, at the moment it is a real shame. You know, everything that we've seen unveiled by BMW this year has not been, you know, universally well received. Certainly not by myself. I just don't see where they're going, and I don't like where they're going. What I see, you know, in terms of their products, it's like they've lost a lot of the brand identity. They've gone to, you know, certain things where, you know, you're kind of questioning who's made these decisions and why they were made and why they were indeed, you know, pushed through into production. Because it's a shame. It's definitely, I think BMW this year just kind of fell off the mantle.
Yeah. And what we can say, just to kind of, you know, finish this off, I can easily see BMW being on, you know, the 2019 awards, on where we say like this was the best design team of the year, because we have not seen anything from Josef Kaban yet. We just haven't. Like, there was nothing out there where he was involved. They've pushed the I stuff and everything, which was you know, all run by Domagoj Dukic. I want to see what BMW is going to be under Kaban. That's what I'm really interested in. And so this is, for me, the disappointment. Like, so far, what they've shown this year, not great. But I can see that there's the potential to go upwards. I think this is also what made the kind of decision for us quite easy. It's like, you know, we can see that it's going upwards, but this is probably like the most disappointing one from that perspective. But so, yeah, I would, you know, obviously not congratulations to BMW, but like, you know, a little bit of a spur for you guys to hopefully show us something very, very soon that comes out that that is a little bit better. From that perspective. And yeah, so to sum up 2018, I think we had in general a good year. I want to thank pretty much everybody who supported us, who listened to us, who watched us, who came to meet us at all the different shows, who sent us messages, you know, who encouraged us to do, you know, to continue the podcast and stuff like that. You know, we do really, really appreciate all the support. I think we've done in total 15 episodes this year, which has been, you know, a hell of a ride. I think we, you know, when we started this out, it was something for us like, I don't know, let's see how it goes. And, you know, we will definitely continue that. So thank you to everybody, to who supported us. Also, obviously, thanks for Eric for always taking time.
Cheers, man.
To do that. I also want to thank our producer, Eddie, who has been patiently, you know, helping us on all those kind of things, you know, setting up the cameras, the lights, you know, having, I don't know, everything, like, you know, the microphones, like, you know, you can hear us because of him. Like, we are absolutely illiterate when it comes to those kind of technical things. So, you know, without him, we couldn't have done it. And also, of course, you know, all the other guys, you know, in the Concept House team and the back office and, you know, from, you know, the other recruiters that are working here, because, you know, everything that we talk about pretty much comes from the conversations that we all have together. So even though they're not in this podcast, you know, small parts and bits and pieces of their opinion are in this as well. It's because we talk about that. So we should never, you know, forget that. And of course, a little bit of encouragement for next year. Give us the feedback if you want to. I mean, we've had some fantastic feedback already. If you have questions, send us emails. You know, if you want to apply for positions that we have available, you know, always check our Instagram, check our LinkedIn. We will post the latest stuff on there as well. Don't hesitate to contact us. We literally have absolutely no, you know, shame in sending your messages back. we're nice guys. Don't worry about that. and so from that side, and I think from the both of us, a big thank you for an absolutely fantastic 2018. We're looking forward to already Detroit, and then, you know, we can't really, you know, we're already planning for Geneva already as well. So, you know, things are moving very, very quickly. And thanks for everything. Thanks, Eric, again for a fantastic year. And
good stuff, man.
And you will hear again from us in 2019.
Yes, quite.
Yeah.
So thanks. Happy holidays, guys.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
See you in the new year.
See you in 2019.